I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
When the separation of families at the border here happened in 2017 and 18, I remember the kinder transport and other instances in which the children have been taken away from the parents. For example, during slavery, children were sold out, taken from their mother's arms.
The Wind Knows My Name. That's the title of the new novel by acclaimed author Isabel Allende, which looks at the trauma of child family separation from the Nazi Holocaust to the U.S.-Mexican border. She joins us today. But first, we speak to the Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa on a new investigation into the sexual abuse of women detained by ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Russian ongoing attacks on Ukrainian grain supplies have destroyed at least 60,000 tons of grain as global food security faces mounting threats. Russia's navy's also carried out live-fire military exercises in the Black Sea days after Moscow withdrew from the Black Sea grain deal, and both Moscow and Kyiv said ships traveling to either Russian or Ukrainian ports through the waterway constitute potential military targets. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said today he'll be holding talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin, which could lead to restoring the grain deal. Meanwhile, Ukraine started using cluster bombs supplied by the United States on the battlefield. Over 100 countries have signed on to an international treaty banning their use due to the danger they pose to civilians, though it's not signed by Russia, Ukraine, or the United States. In Nebraska, the teenager who used abortion pills to terminate her pregnancy was sentenced to 90 days in jail. Police charged 19-year-old Celeste Burgess and her mother, Jessica Burgess, who assisted her in getting the pills and disposing of the fetus, after Facebook handed over their private messages. Celeste was just 17 when her mother ordered the pills online. The events took place before the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade in June 2022. At the time, abortion in Nebraska was banned after 20 weeks. Earlier this year, Governor Jim Pillen signed a 12-week ban into law. Meanwhile, a court in Austin heard testimony this week from women who are suing over Texas's abortion ban, which puts their lives in danger when they were unable to end their pregnancies, even when they were non-viable. In a dramatic moment, plaintiff Samantha Cassiano vomited on the stand as she recounted her traumatic experience. She was forced to carry out her pregnancy even after receiving a diagnosis of anencephaly, a severe congenital disorder that results in a baby being born without portions of its brain and skull. Another plaintiff, Elizabeth Weller, spoke at a news conference Wednesday.
I was sent home to wait for my baby to die or for my infection to start showing physical symptoms, even though they were already there. But I wasn't sick enough to get the care that I needed. There is no statement of pro-life in this state when you send me home to wait for my baby to die inside of me and for me to wait for myself to get to a point where I have to gamble my uterus and gamble my life and gamble any future possibility of becoming pregnant. That's not pro-life. In a sense, it's almost pro-torture.
The press conference was held by the Center for Reproductive Rights, which brought the lawsuit on behalf of 13 patients and two doctors. In related news, new data shows Texas's abortion bans likely leading to a surge in infant mortality as women are forced to carry non-viable pregnancies to term. Infant deaths increased by over 11% last year over the previous year. Meanwhile, infant deaths with severe genetic and birth defects rose by over 21% after years of decline. Florida's Board of Education approved new standards for teaching Black history after Governor Ron DeSantis and Florida Republicans passed new laws limiting what can be taught in classrooms as part of their anti-woke crusade. The standards include teaching children that, quote, slaves develop skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit, unquote. It also instructs educators to teach about violence committed by Black people. The Florida Education Association blasted the new standards, saying, quote, Governor DeSantis is pursuing a political agenda guaranteed to set good people against one another, and in the process, he's cheating our kids. They deserve the full truth of American history, the good and the bad, they said. Vice President Kamala Harris is traveling to Jacksonville today to speak out against Florida's attack on Black history and education. In more news from Florida, rights groups are suing over SB 1718, a new law targeting immigrants, making it more difficult to work and get medical care, among other things. One in five Florida residents is an immigrant. In a statement, the ACLU of Florida said, quote, this legislation is not the solution to any problem. It's an attempt to scapegoat and terrorize vulnerable families and workers already burdened by the difficulty of the federal immigration process, they said. Meanwhile, the Florida Rights Restoration Committee is suing DeSantis, they say, for illegally intimidating people with felonies in order to prevent them from voting. The lawsuit accuses Florida of creating intentional obstacles to determine voting eligibility and creating an election police to go after people who may have cast ballots without knowing they were still not legally permitted to do so. Almost all those targeted by the police force were Black and Democrats. In Georgia, Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger announced another 191,000 people will be purged from Georgia election rolls, even though they're registered voters. The move targets voters who are deemed inactive because mailed election materials were not able to be delivered, and voters who may have not officially signaled an address change. Kendra Cotton, head of the New Georgia Project Action Fund, said, quote, Georgia's well known for its wide-ranging and creative attempts at voter suppression. Voting is a right. If someone chooses not to use it, that doesn't mean they lose it, they said. Meanwhile, in Alabama, lawmakers passed a new congressional map this week that still does not include a second majority Black district as ordered by the U.S. Supreme Court last month. In other news from Alabama, the state executed James Barber early this morning after the U.S. Supreme Court denied a request for a stay. It's the first execution by lethal injection in Alabama following a pause last year to review a series of botched executions. The group reprieve said, quote, there's no humane method of execution. Executions aren't working and it's torture, they said. A warning to our audience, the following story contains descriptions of sexual violence. In India, protesters have taken to the streets after a video went viral on social media showing dozens of men sexually assaulting two women in the northeastern state of Manipur. The incident took place in May, but the video surfaced just this week due to an internet ban in the region. The main suspect was arrested Thursday, accused of dragging the two women, aged 21 and 42, onto the street and inciting a mob of over two dozen men to assault them, then parade them on the streets naked. At least one of them was raped by the mob. Manipur has recently seen soaring ethnic violence between the majority Meitei group and the tribal Kuki minority. The two women assaulted in the video are Kuki. The families of the two survivors have denounced police misconduct, saying it took law enforcement months to address the case. In Ecuador, some 1,200 barrels of crude oil spilled into the Pacific Ocean Wednesday, contaminating over 2 miles of shoreline. Officials with Ecuador's national oil company, Petroecuador, said a tank in a maritime terminal had surpassed its capacity, causing it to spill. The company was only able to contain about half the spilled crude, while the rest collected on the ocean front of the popular Las Palmas beach. Cleanup efforts are underway as environmentalists warn of the effects the spill could have on local wildlife. Here in New York City, lawyers, plaintiffs, and city officials held a news conference Thursday following the announcement the city will settle for $13 million with racial justice protesters who were brutalized by the New York police during the 2020 uprising that followed the murder of George Floyd. This is attorney Wiley Stecklow.
Today's settlement is historic, and I'm very proud that it will bring some sense of justice to nearly 1,400 people who took to the streets and put their bodies in the line against police brutality. But as a New York City taxpayer, I am bothered. The payout is a red flag but we still have NYPD executive officers like Chief of Patrol John Chell, Inspector Elias Nikas, leading unconstitutional protest policing in this city. Their example to the rest of the 35,000 members of service is that the Constitution does not apply simply when these high-ranking members of the service say so.
The Senate Judiciary Committee advanced legislation to mandate the Supreme Court adopt a code of ethics and stricter financial disclosure rules. The move comes following explosive revelations around several justices, most notably Clarence Thomas, who was lavished for decades with luxury travel and gifts by GOP mega donor Harlan Crow. No Republicans voted for the measure, though they did attempt to add amendments to make it easier for judges to carry weapons and to ban reporters from publishing draft opinions without court approval. The amendments were defeated. And in labor news, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE, has averted a strike that would have shut down Broadway after reaching a tentative deal to improve working conditions for some 1,500 stagehands, hair and makeup artists, and wardrobe personnel. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we speak to Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Maria Hinojosa on a new investigation into the sexual abuse of women detained by ICE. And then we speak to Isabel Allende about her new novel. Stay with us.
Donde yo pueda cantar sobre mi dolor. Llevo una inmensa pena. Va en mi corazón. Está clavada tan profundo. Quiero hacerla salir.
Julieta Venegas here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A warning to our viewers and listeners. The story contains descriptions of sexual abuse. We begin today's show with a disturbing new investigation into how immigration officials have failed to properly address complaints of sexual abuse from people held in detention centers. The damning new report by Maria Hinojosa and Ziba Warsi, two immigrant women and journalists, examines how women in immigration and customs enforcement, or ICE jails, have been sexually abused, often in a medical setting, when they're at their most vulnerable. The report's out today from Futuro Investigates, the investigative unit of the Pulitzer Prize-winning news organization Futuro Media and Latino USA. It comes more than a decade after Maria Hinojosa's report for PBS Frontline about sexual abuse in ICE jails. But allegations of abuse have continued. Maria will join us in a minute, but first this clip from the report. When she and Ziba speak with a Venezuelan migrant who is using the pseudonym Viviana for safety, describing her first meeting with a male nurse employed at ICE's Stewart Detention Center in Georgia.
During her first weeks detained at Stewart, Viviana had a urinary tract infection. She was prescribed medication that gave her a severe allergic reaction.
Your face is swollen, your lips are swollen, you were unable to breathe, and you were feeling incredibly scared.
Ay, es que conozco a este enfermero cuando me sucedió eso.
She tells us that in that moment of total vulnerability, that's when she met this male nurse. A short, white man with a beard. And we should warn you, the following descriptions of her visits are explicit. They are hard to listen to, but we also believe that they're necessary to understand what Viviana and other women go through.
Me dice como que si puedo bajarme un poco el pantalón para ver aquí.
So he's using a stethoscope to put it on your lower body. So I'm just to describe what you're showing me is that he takes the stethoscope and he basically puts it right where a woman's ovary might be.
Y me decía, abre la boca Yo abro la boca, mom, me hacía, ay, se reía, ajá, ajá, y reía.
Viviana told us that while examining her with the stethoscope, the nurse asked her to open her mouth and then to open it wider. He then stepped away and typed a question into Google Translate, and this made her feel even more uncomfortable.
Era algo como, si quería saber si tengo novio.
So, at this point, he writes a note to you that asks you if you have a boyfriend. Te pregunta si tienes un novio.
Sí.
Had also reported they were abused by the same male nurse at Stewart. Let's go to another clip from the new investigation.
So, once women started to arrive at Stewart, this nurse started seeing female patients, and Viviana said he started abusing them.
This nurse and his abuse, you believe, was not a secret to anybody who had spent any time inside Stewart, whether they were his colleagues or people who were detained.
Tú sientes que todo el mundo sabía de este enfermero.
Claro.
After that second incident with the nurse, Viviana returned to her cell and broke down in tears. She told other detainees what happened to her.
Yo llego hasta a la celda y lo empiezo a hablar.
So you feel like you were one of the people who helped the other women start naming what was happening.
Y ahí empieza una de Nicaragua, una de El Salvador, y me dicen, me pasó lo mismo.
Women from different countries told her that they suffered similar abuses from the same male nurse. We've reviewed documents that show that at least 5 women came forward and complained against the male nurse. One of them was also another young woman from Venezuela.
An excerpt from the new investigation called Immensely Invisible, which found the pattern of sexual abuse complaints in ICE detention goes beyond the Stewart jail in Georgia. Women were only brought to Stewart in 2020 after ICE had to shut down the Irwin County Detention Center, also in Georgia, when a whistleblower nurse there exposed forced hysterectomies and other invasive gynecological procedures by Dr. Mahendra Amin, who was contracted by LaSalle Corrections, which runs Irwin for ICE. In 2020, Democracy Now! Spoke to a survivor of gynecological abuse while detained at Irwin. Jeremy Floriana Navarro described how she was scheduled for an unwanted hysterectomy while held at Irwin between 2019 and September 2020 until she was deported to Mexico, she believed, in retaliation for speaking up about the abuse. Again, a warning to our audience, her account is extremely disturbing.
And from day one that I met Dr. Min, he said, okay, you need surgery. He did a ultrasound, vaginal ultrasound with the wand. And I didn't even know he was going to do that. To be honest with you, I didn't know that I was going to have to take my pants off or lay on that bed and let him look at me. I didn't know that. Nobody ever told me that I was going to have a vaginal ultrasound. They took me back to see Dr. Amin from March to July at least 25 times. They would take me out constantly to go see him. He would always check me. If it wasn't with his fingers, then it would be with the wand. And to be honest with you, it was uncomfortable each and every time. I didn't like anything he ever did. I didn't like his posture. I didn't like the way he stood in front of me or rested his hand on my knee as he did the vaginal search or whatever he was doing. And it was uncomfortable, to be honest with you. He kept telling me every single time I would see him that I was going to have a surgery. But for some reason, I never knew when the surgery was going to be.
For more, we're joined by Maria Hinojosa, the Pulitzer Prize-winning founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA, which collaborated on this new investigation called Immensely Invisible about the ongoing pattern of sexual abuse in ICE detention. Maria, welcome back to Democracy Now! This is such a harrowing investigation. Talk about all that you have learned. This is over a decade after you did this big PBS investigation.
Amy, you know, we're journalists. The work that we do is actually to serve. And we believe in our work that when we put sunlight, when we put sun, right, when we uncover something, that because we believe we live in such an advanced democratic country, that we believe things are going to get better. And they don't. In this particular case, on the question of people, men, women, children, in this case, we're reporting about women, being sexually abused continuously at government-run immigrant detention centers, consistently gets worse, actually. It doesn't get better. One of the things that we uncovered with this piece with Zeba Warsi from the PBS NewsHour is that one of the things that that ICE is trying to do is to use transfers. This is a term that now you're going to begin to hear more about, those of you who care about this kind of reporting. Transfers as a way to deal with immigrants and refugees who are making complaints. Or transfers in order to deal with one immigrant detention center that is shut down because of abuse. And then people are transferred to another detention facility where they are said, now you're going to be safe. Now you're going to be safe. Or you're going to be transferred from one to another. And now things are going to get better. In fact, we have seen that it's a form of punishment. It's a way of shuffling off the problem, not dealing with the problem. Amy, as you know, we have been friends and colleagues for decades now. And when I uncovered the abuse in the front line in 2011, it was horrific. Senator Dick Durbin goes on the Senate floor and says, because of the front line, that is why PREA, Prison Rape Elimination Act, must be offered in immigrant detention facilities. And here we are, uncovering yet again that ICE investigates itself. What is that? They're investigating themselves. And finally, we have a very specific case of women coming forward, taking agency, which is part of our investigation, right, is that they're not just victims, but they are also taking agency, speaking up, complaining about one male nurse who, as far as we know, has not lost his license and who sexually abused them continuously when they were seen. The nurse, when you're in a vulnerable, just like the cut that we just heard, which is horrific, when women, refugees and immigrants are at their most vulnerable, this is when they are being exposed to being abused by medical personnel. It is horrific. Amy, I had to go into a whole other series of therapy because of this exposure yet again.
So the Southern Poverty Law Center, Maria, reviewed medical records. They showed the male nurse had been working at Stewart Detention Facility, the jail in Georgia, since at least 2018. What's known about his employment now?
We know that he has not lost his license. We know who he is. We tried to communicate. Zeba called him. He hung up. We know that there is no kind of official complaint against him. Nothing that has been legally brought on by ICE or any of the core civic run detention facilities where he may have worked. So he is a predator and he remains out there. And by the way, Amy, if you have a criminal mind, there's a TV show, right? Criminal Minds. If you have a criminal mind, you know exactly where to go to find a job. You go to ICE because you know now that because there is, they need to fill positions, there aren't even background checks. And you have access to men, to women, and to children in trauma. And you know that they will more than likely not complain because, as we talk about in this piece, if you complain, you are going to be threatened. Like the women who we spoke to, they were told that they were going to be sent to prison, that they were going to be deported immediately. Constant coercion and threats.
So
this is horrific. This, Amy, we know. Sadly, you and I will be gone, and they'll make Hollywood movies, we hope, about how this was happening in the United States and how everybody was just like, how is this happening? It's happening today.
Women who are abused in detention are supposed to be protected by the Prison Rape Elimination Act, or PREA. Can you talk about the legislation and the protections ICE and private prison corporations like CoreCivic have repeatedly ignored?
So the Prison Rape Elimination Act was created for prisons, right? It is a way in which to protect people behind bars when they are being sexually assaulted. It is a way in which they can have kind of an independent way to complain. But this, as we know, because immigrants in detention, we do not have the same legal rights. We have no legal rights, zero due process. Senator Dick Durbin was so moved by what we uncovered in 2011 in the Frontline, which you can watch on Frontline on YouTube, that those protections, which is that somebody who's held can make an independent complaint, has access to a way to make this complaint, to follow up on the complaint, that there, in the case of ICE, what Zeba was able to see has changed, right, is that now you have the protocol of having signs all over, which is really dystopian because the abuse continues to happen. But now you have signs everywhere that say, by the way, if you're being abused, you should not be being abused, and you can call this number for help. And what we uncovered is, as you heard Viviana and Mari saying, those signs mean nothing for the people who are being held, absolutely nothing. And that's what's changed, that now there's a sign up. But it doesn't mean that there's a legal protection for women, in this case being who are complaining against sexual abuse. By the way, Amy, for the immigrants who are held in detention, the legal path for them is incredibly complicated because, again, they have no due process because, like me, they were not born in this country. And as a result, you have no due process when you're in immigrant proceedings.
Well, Maria Hinojosa, we're going to link to this incredible investigation you've done. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, founder of Futuro Media, host of Latino USA, the investigation into sexual assault of migrants held at ICE detention jails. Coming up, the acclaimed author Isabel Allende, back in 30 seconds.
Pongo en tus manos abiertas mi guitarra de cantor.
Victor Jara here on Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We spend the rest of the hour with Isabel Allende, one of the world's most celebrated novelists, the author of 26 books that have sold more than 77 million copies and been translated into more than 40 languages. Isabel Allende was born in Peru in 1942. She traveled the world as the daughter of a Chilean diplomat. Her father's first cousin was former Chilean president Salvador Allende. This September marks 50 years since Augusto Pinochet seized power from Allende in a CIA-backed military coup. The date, September 11th, 1973, Salvador Allende died in the palace that day. Isabel Allende would later flee from her native Chile to Venezuela. Her books include The House of the Spirits, Paola, and Daughter of Fortune. Her latest novel, The Wind Knows My Name, looks at the trauma of child family separation from the Nazi Holocaust to the U.S.-Mexican border and those on the front lines helping migrant children. On Thursday, I interviewed Isabel from her home in California. I asked her to start by telling us the story of her new novel, The Wind Knows My Name, beginning in 1938.
In 1938, in November, it was the Kristallnacht in German and Austria. And it was a night in which the Nazi mobs attacked the Jewish houses and establishments, commercial establishments, and they broke the windows and beat up people. And it was just a very scary and terrible preamble to what was going to happen very soon after. And at that point, the Jewish community realized that they had to get out. And so many people started looking for visas and places to go. England offered 10,000 temporary visas for children, to get the children out. And so many families had the terrible choice of sending their children away to save them from a potential danger that was there in the air. And they knew it was coming, but they couldn't be very sure. And still, they had to make that choice. So these kids, ages, I don't know, 1 year old up to 15, went in convoys, in trains to the Netherlands and other places where they would be sent to England. They were received by people who were like, offered their homes, also by orphanages and other establishments. But really, the parents never knew who was going to receive the kids or what was going to happen to them. Most of them, more than 90%,